This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thanks for joining us today. It's great to have you with us. Protests continued in Iran overnight and into today and have spread to dozens of cities. Government security forces have killed at least 21 people so far, but numbers are hard to verify because of censorship within Iran. At least 500 people have been arrested in Tehran alone. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, was on Twitter on Tuesday giving his first public reaction to the anti-government demonstrations. The Ayatollah says enemies of Iran have allied to use the various means they possess, including money, weapons, politics, and intelligence services, to trouble the Islamic Republic. Thomas Erdbrink is Tehran bureau chief for our partner, the New York Times, and he's been following the unrest, and he brings us the latest.
The Iranian government has organized nationwide counter-protests in several cities, of course, meant as a show of strength. English-language state channel here, Press TV, said that the pro-government protests were in reaction to all the violence, as they called it, that had taken place during the week. And some of the protesters, the pro-government protesters again, also referred to that, saying that they were against the rioters. So far from the government side, but there have also been anti-government protests in several cities last night, which is hard to exactly verify because this only comes to me through videos and some phone calls. In the city of Shiraz, some people went on the streets and shouted slogans. In the city of Rush, the same thing happened. And in the small city of Khomeini Shahr, named after the founder of the Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khomeini, people tried to burn down a seminary, a place where Shiite Muslims receive their theological teachings. And this was also captured on video.
Meanwhile, Thomas, you've been learning more about what caused these protests, or at least caused them to grow in the first place. There was some confusion in the early hours, the early days, about who exactly was protesting and why, who might have been behind it. And you've been learning more.
Yes, well, what happened was that the initial protest, the one that sparked all the anti-government protests in the country, started on Thursday in the city of Mashhad. Now, Mashhad is a religious city. It's a city with lots of importance in Iran. It's where the eighth imam of the Shiites, Imam Reza, is buried. And suddenly, around noon, a group of people there, without making any announcement on the internet or social media, showed up there and started shouting slogans against President Rouhani and shouted slogans like "Death to the dictator." And that protest was actually filmed and distributed on Telegram, which is a messaging app that 48 million Iranians use. And after that, the other protest really took off. But what we've learned is that the protest in Mashhad was most likely organized by hardliners who wanted to try and make President Rouhani look bad, because also President Rouhani, just some weeks before, had presented his proposed budget, in which he had, for the first time, also revealed the details of how much money religious institutions are getting. Now, the same budget also called for a hike in fuel prices, for an end to subsidies to 30 million Iranians. It called for a higher departure tax for Iranians wanting to go abroad. So when people saw how much money these institutions were getting, or sometimes up to hundreds of millions of dollars or the equivalent of that, that had already fueled a lot of anger. And then when people saw that in Mashhad, protesters suddenly came out, they followed suit, and that led to a whole chain of events.
You've been writing also about internal power struggles within the Iranian government.
Yes, Iran is from a distance, and especially from the United States, often viewed as a full-on theocratic dictatorship. But there are actually different shades of gray in this country. And two factions that you might have heard of are the reformists and the conservatives, or hardliners, if you will. Now, both groups try to control Iran. They have a long-standing fight, and the reformist moderate faction currently is headed by President Rouhani, who is seeking greater power in order to make more change inside the country. And you can also see that he is now using the result of this week of protest as a reason why he should be getting more power and more ability to make changes, because he is pointing out that people should have the right to demonstrate. Of course, they should not vandalize things, and people should be able to express themselves more. So he is using the protests that were actually against him as a sort of leverage to force hardliners that control Iran's other centers of power, like the judiciary, to allow these changes to take place, to give more freedom to people, and to allow for more changes in the economy.
Can you describe a little bit some of the clashes, at least as much as can be known, about what's gotten people killed in these cases?
I think it's really important to understand that people came out onto the streets because of all the economical pressures that are coming down upon them. There's high unemployment, there's high inflation. People feel that literally they have reached the end. The level of violence used by the security forces led to at least 21 people dead. So it is obvious that protesters felt prompted to engage with the security forces, and that also security forces felt the need to quell this protest. Now, I've heard of a story of a 15-year-old boy that was killed in that city I just mentioned before, Khomeini Shahr, where people tried to burn down a seminary. It is unclear what the exact circumstances were, how this boy died, but you can imagine that if such a thing happens, it will entice people to also use violence as they're protesting.
Thomas Erdbrink in Tehran with the New York Times. Thomas, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Meanwhile, while these protests spread around Iran, countries in the region are watching closely, looking for signs of instability within Iran. Borzu Deragahi has a view now from Istanbul, where he reports for BuzzFeed. Borzu, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Borzu, you're there in Istanbul. Turkey has expressed concern publicly and concerns over violence during the protests in Iran. Does this go beyond sort of normal diplomatically framed concern that we see a lot in situations like this? What's Turkey worried about?
You know, the language is rather normal diplomatic language, but it's my understanding that the Turkish government does not want a revolution, another uprising in another neighboring country. They're worried about instability. They're worried about refugees and so on. If Iran should descend into the kind of situation that Iraq and Syria have descended into, and probably when push comes to shove, the Turkish government will side with the forces of stability, i.e. the regime, over the forces of what it perceives as instability, this sort of undefined mass of protesters.
We were just talking a couple of minutes ago about how the Ayatollah in Iran had blamed Iran's enemies for the protests. Usually that means the United States, and may in fact to the regime mean the United States this time. But what about Saudi Arabia and some of Iran's other rivals? I wonder how those countries are viewing these protests and how the regime inside Iran might be viewing their influence.
Well, you know, I mean, that's an easy way of getting national sentiment whipped up is, you know, referring to conspiracies by, you know, the Arabs, which in the case of Iran usually means Saudi Arabia. And, you know, the Saudi crown prince, unfortunately, earlier this year had said that, you know, we will not let the Iranians come and, you know, do battle here. He said something to the effect of, we're going to take the battle to Iran. And so that kind of plays into the hands of the regime, you know. And I have spoken to people who were, you know, on the front lines of the 2009 uprising, people in Iran and also in the diaspora who were in the 2009 uprising. And I asked them, why aren't you supporting this movement now? Why aren't you out there in the street? And one of the things they say is like, well, we don't know who is behind these protests. Is it a conspiracy by the hardliners? Is it Saudi Arabia? Is it, you know, the CIA? And Trump said he's going to try to destabilize Iran too. What if this is all a sort of conspiracy? What if there is this sort of hall of mirrors? We don't want to get duped into that hall of mirrors. And I think that's one of the issues that's going to be at play going forward is, you know, these guys have no leaders, these protesters. They have no organizational structure. They have no address. In 2009, you had the reform movement of Iran with its politicians, its parties, its civil society groups as the address for the protest movement, at least large swaths of it. This time around, we don't know, you know, who's behind these guys. My sense is that there's no one behind them. This is a viral sensation, people frustrated, people angry, the people who've been trampled upon for decades, ignored by the political leaders. These are the people who are rising up at this point. And I can understand their anger because I've heard it many times when I've been in Iran. But, you know, it's not certain who is behind it.
Do you see any similarities in the populist sentiment from lower middle class and low income people in Iran to what goes on in the West and what's gone on in the United States? I mean, I know they're completely different cultures. Is it a similar kind of frustration?
Yeah, there's a similar kind of frustration at Iran's version of neoliberalism, which is this kind of philosophy of trickle-down austerity, you know, austerity measures for the bulk of people meant to keep inflation low to encourage investment. And, you know, that is, you know, hurting a lot of people at this point. And there's also similarity in the kind of rising nationalism among Iranians, you know, and that can be played either way, that nationalism. It can be played for kind of a populist left-wing cause, like, you know, we're being humiliated by the big fat cats and so on. Or it can be played in a sort of demagogic, xenophobic way, like, you know, we have to stand up to these, you know, American and Israeli and Saudi invaders, go out there and crush them. And that feeling is, you know, kind of rising up. People are becoming more chauvinistic throughout the world, you know, not less. And that emotion, that emotional connection to one's nation can be abused in, you know, rather terrible ways sometimes.
Borzu, in easing off of sanctions after the nuclear agreement with Iran was supposed to, at least from the outside, relieve some of these pressures, right? Give Iran access to hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue, frozen assets, oil revenue that they could sell on the world stage, and help them help their own people inside Iran. Is that happening?
It did happen. There were some economic growth pro-sanctions. You know, I live in Istanbul, so all of a sudden I've seen in the last couple of years just a fresh new flood of Iranian tourists coming here to Turkey and spending money that they didn't have before. What happened is that you had the sanctions relief. It did ease some of the pressure, especially in places like Tehran, where there are international businesses, where there's international investment and so on, where there's kind of a certain cachet of living there. Real estate prices went up, but it didn't lift all boats. And I think that created a lot of resentment, while at the same time, the easing of sanctions really raised expectations, maybe much higher than the regime is capable of fulfilling. And so that created a lot of problems and anger as well.
And so what about now, these messages of support from President Trump on Twitter? Does that support even reach the protesters, the people on the streets? And if they're hearing it, do they want to hear it from President Trump?
I think it does reach people. I think that there are some people who welcome it, some Iranians who welcome that. They say the world is not forgetting us and so on. But I think by and large, it's probably a little bit of a mistake, just a little bit. It's not a decisive mistake, because it gives the regime more rhetorical ammunition when, not if, when it decides to violently crack down and smear the protesters as foreign agents.
Borzu Deragahi in Istanbul for BuzzFeed. Borzu, thank you.
It's my pleasure.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.